Joining me on the line to discuss this is Mansoor Ashkar, who is a former Special Forces IDF soldier and who himself comes from the Druze community in Israel. Mansoor, thanks for chatting with us again. This attack marks the first major church bombing in Damascus since the former Syrian president Bashar al-Assad fell. What does it say about Islamic State's ability to strike deep inside the capital, and how urgent is the threat to minorities like Christians and Druze in Syria today?
The threat is very, very urgent. And not only that, there's some interesting details about this attack that are not being spoken. It seems that the guy who committed this attack, he went with a machine gun, started shooting people, and then he went and tried to enter the church, and some of the Christians tried to actually fight him and stop him, and then he detonated himself on everybody. But that particular man was known to be, that's what I heard at least from my Syrian sources, as a very known person who was driving around the area there with a big megaphone on his car and calling the Christians that they should convert to Islam, come to Allah. He was known to the authorities. And apparently, from what I'm hearing from the Christian sources and Druze sources there, the authorities were quite around the area when he started shooting, and they didn't really do much to go and try to stop it. So the people in Syria, and that's what happened when you have an organization that was built by Daesh, ISIS, and Al-Qaeda, and they helped overthrow the Assad regime, and now they put their leader on top of it. When your police is member of these organizations or former members, they have an uncle in ISIS and Al-Qaeda, or they were in Al-Qaeda, it makes it very difficult for the minorities in Syria to feel safe. I think a very good benchmark is if you come to an Arab country and you're a Christian, or you're a woman, or you're a Jewish, doesn't matter what, LGBT, and a crime is happening against you and you go to report to the police, and there's a chance that the police might, you know, attack you or kill you or not help you, then that's a very, very bad state. And in Syria right now, the minorities cannot trust the authorities because they fear the authorities, because often the authorities are part of the problem. Now, is Jawlani going to do anything to stop it? Is he really trying to stop it, or is he just milking the West for money? I think most of my friends in Syria and around the world that were former Syrians are thinking that this is just a trick, a stunt. They don't want the minorities there. They want to kill the Christians. They want to kill the Druze. And they're being left for themselves. You know, to add into that, there's quite a lot of solidarity that is coming right now from the Druze in Syria towards the Christian brothers, telling them, you can come here, you can hide among us, we'll protect you. And that is how it should be. You know, that these are Druze Arabs, these are Christian Arabs. They're living very well together. Why can't many of the Muslim Arabs there just, you know, follow suit and stop trying to kill these minorities? And that is a very big question.
Mansoor, the bomber reportedly, as I said, opened fire, and you said as well, before detonating himself. What does this brutality tell us about the evolving tactics of extremist groups in Syria?
It tells you that they're so fixated on killing, and they've been writing a textbook on how to kill. They had cases in the past where a shooter will go and start shooting, and then the brave men and women will jump and stop him. So he thought, how can I even kill these brave men and women that will come and try to stop me? I'm going to make sure that I kill as many as I can to my last breath. If you understand radical Islam, they see it as a reward. They see it as the right thing. I've actually just seen a video that is circulating from a woman from Syria who's a religious Muslim woman who is condemning not the attack on the church, but condemning other Muslims that are writing posts like rest in peace Muslims while they laugh at them and says, you should not even say rest in peace because these pigs should go to hell. So there is people that are so vile in the way that they see life. And when you bring someone like that, you give him a lot of, you know, radicalization, religious radicalization, you give him weapon, you give him a lot of support from the community that this is the right thing. He ends up going and saying, I'm going to kill as many as I can and do the best thing that I can do in my life, which is die in the name of Allah and take as many humans as I can with me.
Do you think that this church attack reflects a broader campaign that targets all non-Sunni minorities in Syria?
Absolutely. If you see some older videos with reports, with interviews with Jawlani, he says clearly that he was sent to Syria by al-Baghdadi, by ISIS, to conquer Syria and make sure they establish, make Syria Sunni. And he says there in his interviews, you know, the younger days where he had a bigger beard and he was clear, you know, case that he's an ISIS or al-Qaeda, he said that anyone that is not Sunni in Syria should be either killed or kicked out. Now, when we look now what is happening, it's kind of follows suit with what he said back then. I mean, the people in Syria, the minorities are not safe. Students, Druze and Christian students are fleeing Damascus because if they go to university, the girls will get kidnapped and become sex slaves and the men will die. And minorities are right now fleeing, the Alawites, the Christians, the Druze. Any minority in Syria is not safe. And not only that, I mean, very interesting enough with Iran right now, when they were fighting, you know, with Israel, there were factions from Iraq and from Iran of militant, you know, terrorist organizations that drove and they wanted to come and attack Israel by foot. Now, these guys are Shia. So what happened is the Syrian, they sent their Sunni forces to go and fight them. Only they were humiliated and destroyed on the way. And these guys were basically stopped because the next thing was the Druze Mountain. And if they want to come close to Israel to start shooting rockets and missiles in Israel, they have to go and fight with the Druze. And also probably Israel sent a message, that's it until here. But there's a clear fight there between the Sunnah against anyone that is not Sunnah in Syria.
Yolani has included Druze and Christian minorities in his government. What do you think? It's a joke? Do you think he's just trying to keep the Western powers happy? I mean, what does it tell you about the limits of political inclusion in Syria when you have churchgoers that are killed?
Yeah, well, I know from the Druze side. I mean, the Christians are going to have to speak for themselves here. I don't want to, you know, say anything wrong on behalf of the Christians in Syria. The Druze are a bit split in Syria. There's like almost three factions there. There's a faction that are saying we're going to stand proud and tall. We're not going to give our weapon. We're going to defend our women and children. We see what's happening. And then there's the one that are kind of in the middle trying to mitigate and make it political and, you know, kind of let's calm everybody. These two groups, they kind of work together. One is, you know, holding the sword and the other one is holding the book and trying to see which solution is going to work best. There is the third group there that many Druze in Syria see them as traitors. They are in the government. They are calling for the dismantling of the Druze people. And from the Druze side, they feel like they've been bought off and just trying to betray their brothers and sisters, because everybody knows if the Druze will give away their weapon, then aside from the Kurds, that's going to be the last group that can defend itself right now in Syria.
If Bashar had still been in power in Syria, do you think Syria's current instability and church bombing could have been, would have been avoided, or would it simply have taken a different form?
That's a good question. And they have a very sad answer. You know, I don't like saying that the solution is another evil, but in this case, the Christians and the Druze and the minorities were safer under Bashar al-Assad. Now, needless to say, Bashar al-Assad was pure evil. He was executing and killing his people, mass graves of hundreds of thousands, very evil. But at least he was a very evil, strong dictator, which many cases you see in the Middle East, they need some kind of very strong figure to hold them at bay. And you just can hope that this man is going to be moral and strong. In that case, Bashar al-Assad was very bad, but at least he defended the minorities more than now. Now it's a free-for-all. It's the Mad Max of the Arab world. Anyone who want to go and kill goes kills, and people get excited from that.
And I'm not advocating either for Assad, but I do want to ask you, with Assad's fall, Iran obviously lost one of its key regional footholds. Today we see this Israel-Iran war, and do you think that that is a result or a long-delayed consequence of Iran losing Syria as a stronghold?
You're talking about the fall of Iran?
I'm talking about the fall of Assad. So with the fall of Assad and he no longer has a stronghold in Syria, is that, you know, not necessarily a direct reason, but part of the reason why we have Iran weakened and we have a situation that Israel and Iran are at war?
No, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of hate from people from Syria towards Iran, because the only way that Assad was able to maintain his power when he's got really weakened and Russia was too involved with the Ukraine war is Hezbollah and Iran were helping him to oppress, and they were literally sending their forces, their officers, their soldiers to go and kill and torture and, you know, just kidnap Syrian people. So the only way Assad was able to hold his regime was through the help of Iran. And, you know, Iran had other benefits. They can build missiles, rockets, you know, and bases in Syria close to Israel. They had a big drug industry that they were sponsoring their acts of terrorism for Hezbollah and etc. So when Israel started dismantling Hezbollah, in Iran, weakened, and that literally gave the shooting, you know, the starting mark for the Syrians to go and take over the Assad regime. In a very funny kind of picture, today in a Druze village in Sweda, the Druze warriors have managed to take anti-aircraft vehicle truck and you know, take it from the enemy, and they wrote on it Hezbollah hunters, kind of on this as a joke, kind of towards, you know, the Hezbollah and the Iranian regime that were literally clearly the enemy of Syria. So to your question, yes, absolutely.
And then as a follow-up to that, did Assad's collapse disrupt Tehran's arms route to Hezbollah?
Yeah, big time. That was a big, big blow to Iran. Iran have been losing its main leverage over Israel. They kept Hezbollah in Syria as some kind of a gun to the head of Israel. If you mess with us, we're going to just give the mark. We're going to launch 10,000 rockets on you in the same day. We're going to send all of our forces. And Israel took them down. Hezbollah completely collapsed. Not only that, Hezbollah actually feels betrayed by Iran, because if you see, there was a very interesting post when Israel started attacking Iran and Iran asked Hezbollah, go and attack. Hezbollah came and said very clearly, sorry, we're not getting involved. Why is that? Because when Hezbollah was being destroyed by Israel, Hezbollah was crying to Iran, Iran, help us. And Iran said, sorry, we're not getting involved. But what can you expect from evil regimes? You know, when you're evil all the way. You're not halfway evil. They're evil towards each other. They're evil toward themselves. You can see the best picture is look how they treat their own people, let alone their allies.